Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Goals on Film, Edge of the Crowd's dedicated sports movies podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and I've got Stewie and Dan joining me for this week's episode. How are you both doing today?
Great, mate. Excited to jump into another episode of Goals on Film. And great to have Dan with us as well. How are you doing, Dan?
Yeah, I'm good. It's going to be a big episode tonight because we're branching out of sports movie territory tonight, but we are absolutely on my home turf, so I'm quite looking forward to this evening's episode.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it as well, and I hope that all our listeners are as well. And Dan is right, we are changing things up for this week's episode. We've done feature films, we've done mockumentaries, but this week, for the first time on Goals on Film, we're taking a look at a documentary. And the documentary that we're looking at for this week's episode is 2017 cycling turned doping conspiracy documentary Icarus. And we'll get into that sort of a little bit later in terms of the documentary taking an unexpected and unimaginable twist halfway through. But just to sort of give you an indication about what Icarus is about, it was a documentary that begins with filmmaker, director, lifelong cyclist Brian Fogel, who set out to experience the effects of performance-enhancing drugs and to expose how easy it is to outsmart anti-doping tests. However, with the help of Russian scientist Grigory Rodchenkov, who was a director of the WADA-accredited laboratory in Moscow, Fogel used all sorts of testosterone, human growth hormones, as he trained for the 2015 Haut route. However, along the way, he inadvertently becomes entrenched in Rodchenkov's world, which leads back to state-sponsored doping of athletes ahead of the 2014 Sochi Olympic Games. By the end of the film, what began as an exploration into PEDs and evading anti-doping tests resulted in the mysterious deaths of two Russian anti-doping officials, with Rodchenkov becoming a key figure in the report that outlined what was happening and ultimately disappearing into US Federal Witness Protection Program. That was basically, it seems like that covers so little of what happened, but it also covers a lot of what happened. But we'll go to both of you. What did you guys think of the movie? What do you have to say about it?
Well, not so much a comment on the movie, but I know Dan is you're a bit of a cyclist, mate. You're a bit of an avid cyclist. Yeah, have you gone this route yourself? You've tried it, straight and then tried it with the PEDs and
caffeine, protein powder, and creatine are about as far as my doping has ever got. I am very much of the belief that I would be a far better cyclist if I lost 10 kilos rather than if I took performance enhancing drugs, but I like chocolate cake too much for that at the moment. So we're working on it, but it takes a while. I was really hoping, Jesse, you were going to throw straight to the how true to story is this movie kind of question that we normally get. I was going to say, I think just a little bit, given the fact that this documentary had such massive impacts afterwards. But I found it really interesting because I got into cycling and first idolized Lance Armstrong, which of course didn't turn out super well for me when he later confessed to not only having doped, but having a doping program that he ran and bullied other people out of the sport to protect.
That's fascinating. You know, if you're from a time where Lance Armstrong was, the man in cycling and, just vehemently denying that he ever took anything and getting angry with people and just that turnaround, that fall from grace, incredible. Sorry, Dan. Go on, mate.
But it's interesting because one of the things that always followed Lance was there was some sort of accusation about his doping, whereas you look at a lot of the clean riders of that time, guys like Cadel Evans, guys like Andy and Frank Schleck, there were never doping allegations about them. The guys who are clean don't whisper that they're doping. It's pretty amazing that, you can get around the doping test so easily. But at the end of the day, as testing methods improve, people get caught. And someone looked back and like in the 2005, actually just like looking at the Tour de France generally, There are only two people who ever completed a Tour de France faster than Cadel Evans who weren't at some point in their career busted for doping.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Which is wild because the man, well, aside from the year that he, up until he anytime he finished in the top 10, there were a couple of years he finished in the mid-30s and there are a lot of clean cyclists who beat him those years. But when he finished in the top 10, basically everyone in those top 10s has been wiped out at some point for doping. Wow. A lot of them a long time afterwards as methods caught, testing methods caught up with technology and they could retest old samples. So it's interesting, but to see how easy it is to escape the doping controls was a bit scary.
Did you say how you enjoyed the film, Stuart?
Yeah, I didn't. But I'll let you know about it. honestly, this is one of the wildest documentaries I've ever seen before. I've watched it four or five times in my life. You know, where it starts and where it ends couldn't be more, well, I guess they're kind of related. It's just slightly like distant cousins from each other, you know?
You can see that they learned a lot and changed their mind about halfway through, kind of like the film shows.
Absolutely. I think they've got that scene where the guy's standing there listening to him tell the story and you can see his brain ticking over like, wait a minute, we've got a different story on our hands here, something much bigger.
Right. I need to escape. I'm going to get the flight for you right now.
Holy. So it's just fascinating. I love Gregory. I just think he's a fascinating, just weird man, and I could just watch him on the camera over and over again. He's brilliant. I was really into like the initial premise as well for the documentary. I thought that was cool. And one thing I want to touch on before we get too far away from there, they're called performance-enhancing drugs. And when he does it the second time on the performance-enhancing drugs, he doesn't improve at all. So technically, his performance is not enhanced. They're just drugs.
It's interesting that they would talk, there's a little bit of talk inside about, you know, even if you are to dope, like for some people, it just doesn't work. Like you have to also have a certain physiology to get kind of the benefit of those performance enhancing drugs.
Oh, right. Okay.
And clearly Fogel wasn't one of those people, but you also have to train and all that. And, you know, there's a bit of a running joke that, you know, it comes from a very cynical place in cycling that, you know, it's like a second training, you know, doing drugs because it's got to be so regimented and so planned and, you know, measured out the same way your diet is and your wattage is measured the same way. And it's such hard work to do that it's like having a whole other training regime on top.
I'm going to do an injection. Exciting.
Almost there. Come on, Brian.
Did you start your program?
I did.
This is my morning pill popping routine. And then I prepare the testosterone.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So that was one thing that kind of fascinated me that they didn't enhance his performance at all. So, yeah. But great documentary. Won an Oscar, right?
It did.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, so.
Best documentary feature.
Yep, absolutely brilliant. So, yeah.
Jason, really enjoyed it.
Thank you for asking. No, I did. And yeah, I think this was one of the films that Stewie sort of recommended a few weeks ago and one that I hadn't really heard of or, you know, known the story of. Like, I mean, I knew the story of, but, you know, didn't know that they sort of made it into a documentary. And so I thought it was really good as well. It was sort of like, yeah, unlike a documentary that I'd ever seen before. And I don't know whether that was like, because like it obviously, you know, leaned into, you know, one of the biggest sort of sports scandals, you know, in the world as well, or just sort of like where it started off. Because like you, Stewie, like where it started off and for that first sort of like 45 minutes, an hour, like I was very happy to follow along with that story about, you know, how performance enhancing drugs could help your performance. And especially with Brian Fogel training for that particular event, like I was fully invested in that. And then, yeah, as we sort of said, it took a turn and everything just started like piling up and it got so dramatic that, you know, it was hard to not be invested in that side of things either. So I think that, yeah, for totally different reasons, and we saw totally different things play out throughout each hour of the film. I think that, yeah, it just kept your interest, kept that dramatic up, and yeah, it kept you really sort of involved in the story and wondering what happened, even though, and like, I guess, like, you know, you sort of know what happened in the end because it became this global news story. But I think just like seeing it from sort of, I guess, the inside, and seeing people who were actually actively involved in the whole process of doping, anti-doping, you know, the involvement throughout, you know, a few years and a few, you know, Olympics and Paralympic Games and Winter Olympics. Yeah, I think that to get that insight into it just sort of enhanced knowing the story a bit more.
Does Russia have a systematic statewide doping system in place to cheat the Olympics?
Yes.
Were you the mastermind of a statewide system that cheated the Olympics?
Of course. Yes.
Russia won a total of 73 medals in the 2008 Beijing Olympics. How many of those athletes were dirty?
30.
Russia won 81 total medals in London. How many of those were dirty?
Or even more. 50%, that's for sure. Let it be 50%. They were earned using special program, state sponsored, of course.
Was Putin aware of the existence of a Russian doping system?
Yes, aware of my name.
Instead of using the science that you developed to get around the system, you abandoned the science.
Yes. The most important, yes. Forget about this.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've got a question for you guys. Maybe you know, maybe you don't know, but did Fogel and that, did they break that story by making that documentary?
Essentially, yeah.
And wow.
I have often wondered whether Grigory knew that he was going to do this. Like, he planned, this is my whistleblower moment.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it almost happened by accident, just like as they were doing it. Because it's a pretty huge bomb to drop.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you'd think about that and like premeditate it a little bit.
Yeah, I guess I reckon that'd be kind of smart, actually, because you got film crew following you around, you know, be difficult for any, you know, nefarious KGB agents to get their hands on you or whatever. So yeah, that's an interesting theory.
Yeah. And I think the thing was as well, like, I think Fogel initially reached out to someone, who was like, you know, I can't be involved with this anymore, but hey, I know this another guy, and it turned out to be Grigory. And so, like, I don't know if you'd call it like fate or anything, but like, I mean, they basically met because of another connection, you know, Brian and Grigory. And so, yeah, you've got to wonder, like, I think that, yeah, this obviously did break the story. And, you know, Icarus is essentially responsible for the Russian Olympic ban as well, because, you know, they were banned from the 2018 Winter Olympics, competed under a neutral flag in Pyeongchang. And yeah, this documentary came out a little while after, you know, they'd said, you know, no Russian athletes are competing, or this is our recommendation. But certainly this documentary came out, you know, well before the 2018 games, and was responsible for instigating that ruling.
What a cop out that a country gets like caught out for systematic doping and cheating, and the punishment is you can't use your flag and your song has to be different when you win.
Stewie, you're going to come on Ascending Olympus to the crowd's other podcast. I'm going to talk about that because, my goodness, there have been debates, and we're coming up to a couple of special episodes and there are going to be more debates. So we will have you on for that debate.
I look forward to it, mate. Fantastic.
But yeah, I think like throughout the whole film, like I wondered like how much, you know, say Fogel or Grigory sort of knew what was happening and like what was being filmed and whether it would get out. Because like obviously a lot of their methods of say like Even at the start, like, you know, sneaking urine through the airport, which he later admits is a technique that Russia uses to keep their Olympic athletes clean at the Sochi Games in 2014. And just like, even, you know, like if my face was like plastered all over the news as being involved in this, it was like Grigory was like so out in the open at the same time as well. Which like I found sort of a bit astonishing. I would think that, like, you know, he might have wanted to go into hiding, you know, a bit sooner than that, because, you know, his face is involved in this scandal. But yeah, I don't know, like, I just wonder, you know, what the filmmakers or, you know, the editors sort of knew at the time of while they were filming, and you know, what they originally wanted to sort of uncover versus what they did and what they chose to keep in, and whether, and, you know, obviously keep filming as well. But yeah, just sort of the story that they wanted to tell in the end.
Do you think it was irresponsible of them to do it that way?
I think if they got permission from, do you mean like to have Grigory's face on there and have all the behind the scenes stuff? I think if he says, yeah, I'm down to do it, I think then all bets are off. But if there was any coercing or anything, I think that's probably a bit. But
even just to be so kind of laissez-faire about what they were shooting and what they were showing and the commentary on it, like, you can kind of see it, like, we're at that halfway point where they're like, oh, we've got a story here. We need to like shape ourselves up. But do you think it was irresponsible of them to kind of get that far down the path before they realized that they needed to really, you know, tighten everything up?
I don't know if I think it's irresponsible, but it definitely, you know, maybe. Like they probably could have done a couple of things. They could have had a second look at before they pushed on forwards and just thought, is this the right way to go about things? Is this the right way to shoot this? Is this the right way to tell this story? Yeah, so that's just a classic sit on the fence there, Dan.
It's okay. We're all good fence sitters when
I think, like, some of the, like, the creative choices, especially when they do learn that there's a bigger story developing, I think, like, yeah, a few of the choices to, like, sort of stick with that story or that line of filming, and just, like, the progression of it all, I think that, yeah, they obviously knew that there was a big story brewing and that, you know, it might get out and it will get out. And yeah, I think that just like the continuation of like pressing this story, and like that's why, like, I sort of brought it up again, you know, like even Brian Fogel, like housing Grigory, you know, like I'd even
massive risk, yeah.
Yeah, I'd even think, like, you know, if you've developed, I know they've like had built this connection through at first sort of explaining the process of how to get
drugging him for him. Rory being his dealer. Is that what we're going to talk about?
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah, like obviously we see it at the start where they're, yeah, working on how to get under, you know, doping and anti-doping policies and procedures, and then, like, so they've built that connection, that relationship. But like if I was Brian Fogel, like as soon as I knew of Grigory's involvement in this bigger scandal, I would have like got out of there quick smart. I was just like, no, we're not doing this again. Or, you know, maybe not like doing this again, like maybe still you know, go through with creating this documentary. But, and like I guess Grigory's are like prime example of you know, who you probably want to focus on. But I think if I was the director, if I was Brian Fogel, I'd be like, I want to cut ties with you right now. Like, I don't want to get swept up in this myself.
I don't think Grigory would take no for an answer. He seems like you know, he might be a bit of maybe a can short of a six pack. Yeah, he's definitely a different cat. Let's just say that. Just some of the outfits he's getting around in, and Yeah.
Would you say he's a couple of needles short of a doping program?
I'm squeamish when it comes to, you know, scenes with needles and stuff, and I kind of forgot about those at the start of this documentary. So there was a few like, oh, no, I don't want to look at that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm sticking needles in myself too. Like, I'd get squeamish, so it's sticking... Seeing someone stick a needle like in themselves too, like, yeah,
it's a no for me, dog.
You guys clearly haven't hung out with diabetics much because they're like bloody pin cushions, self-inflicted pin cushions most of the time.
All right, Dan, we'll get to the question that you think that I should have asked at the start. What references to history are there in this movie? Are there
none? Yeah. It's all totally fictional.
It's like, imagine if it was.
Well, there was a show called The Newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
It was an HBO show, and that essentially is this, you know, it's major bombshell story, but actually all made up. And I think it was the second season of that show. So I am just glad that it was all true and it wasn't, you know, someone pulling the wool over everyone else's eyes in making this. But I think, of course, we know the answer to how true this film is to what references to history are made in this film.
How rich did this film make? Was it Brian Fogel? Did he would have got?
I don't
pretty,
know. Would have got. You'd think so. Not bank. Not as rich as it made the lawyers involved. That I can promise.
Yeah, what a gold mine though to stumble on, you know? That's just the story turning into what it was from what they began with. It's just it's pretty serendipitous a little bit for the creators and the lawyers too, Dan.
Yeah, and I think it's different because like, you know, we obviously know the outcome of what happened, you know, at the end. You know, it was a great big news story around the world.
Today, the World Anti-Doping Agency suspended Russia's sports drug testing lab.
99% of Russian athletes are guilty of doping.
It is an unimaginable level of criminality.
And it had ramifications for a lot of people and the Olympics in general as well. You know, the IOC, every sporting body. And like, I think that can be a bit of a difference between a film like that sort of tackles or shows this particular, line of, documentary making versus something else that, you know, we sort of sometimes can associate with documentaries. And that is, you know, the filmmaker can easily tell their own story through editing and whatever they want to show. And I think that, yeah, this, because it was something that was so widely known about in terms of the story and just like the outcome and, yeah, just the result of it, I think that is what sort of differs it from other documentaries and actually like forces it to properly be, you know, as true, sort of outline as true of the events as it actually happened. So I think that like, yeah, the documentary obviously did a good job at doing that.
Yeah, and I think that's a feature of documentaries as a whole, is that when you know the outcome and what it should be, you do kind of have to stick to it. But in this case, with so many eyeballs on it, they really kind of were forced to not take too many licenses or get slack on storytelling because people just go, hang on a minute.
The next question that we do ask, which could have a bit of different answers as well, is how true to the sport is the movie? Now, I know that we probably don't have a real world insight into, say, like the doping side of things. But Dan, we might use you for this one and just reference sort of the first parts of the film where there is actually sport shown. Where it is actually showing Brian Fogel cycling and the races and just like his preparation at different stages and the mental toll. So based on all of that, Dan, as our cycling expert, how true to the sport is the movie?
Yeah, I think it's pretty accurate. I mean, Fogel is a pretty accomplished amateur cyclist. He's a guy who's pretty fit, does his training and races at what's a fairly high level for amateurs, particularly amateurs of his age. And so I think that there is a lot of truth to that. And I think the other part of kind of how true to the sport it is that, like, when they're talking about how to dope and how to evade testing and all that, from what we know about the doping controls in Armstrong's program and in Operation Puerto, which broke in 2005 or six, and the Festina affair, which was, of course, 1998 Tour de France's embarrassment. A lot of those techniques and ideas are evolved, but similar to what those techniques were there. And that makes sense because this is obviously evolved to evade detection, whereas all those guys before got caught. But you can see that the science has kind of just tweaked rather than it's a whole new science of doping. And so there is kind of, there's not a lot of license, and they are pretty accurate about all of those parts of the film.
Fascinating. I've got nothing to add. Jace, sorry, mate.
neither. I could not possibly add anything else. So, I would take Dan on his word about everything that he just said.
You could have made up anything then, Dan. Yeah.
In 1998, there was what was called the Festina affair, where the first team was the Festina team. Their hotel rooms were raided by French police during the Tour de France for drugs, and drugs were found in the physio's car and in the hotel rooms and in three or four other places. And they were thrown out of the race. And within about 48 hours, I think it was seven teams were thrown out of the race for basically these drug programs that came with it.
Was that like the first cracks in the dam of doping in cycling?
Cycling and doping go back basically as far. Doping in cycling goes back as far as cycling goes back.
Yeah, right. Okay, fair enough.
You know, there have been guys who've died because they overdosed on the drugs that they were doping in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Yeah, right.
But that was one of the big modern scandals where we had kind of en masse, and we had part of what changed in 98 with the Festina affair was it was a team sanctioned and organized doping program. It wasn't just, you know, guys messing around with their own performance enhancing drugs. This was, you ride for this team, you do the training that we instruct of you, and you do the doping we instruct of you. And then in 2000, and I think it was five or six, we had Operation Puerto, which was a basically a coordinated sting against a particular doctor who consulted for a bunch of teams. And there are a lot of riders implicated as being associated with this doctor and having doped as a result. And so a lot of bans were handed out. A lot of guys were picked up and thrown out of races for testing positive because their samples were retested with new methods that, you know, that basically beaten out of the doctor. And there was another kind of major reckoning. And then 5 or 6 years after that, we had Armstrong's confession, and that was the other really big reckoning for drugs in the Tour de France or in cycling.
Sorry, man. So with the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, stuff like that, do they do the thing where if you get busted for doping, they take your medal or your trophy off you or whatever and give it to the next guy? Or
in some cases,
mm-hmm.
In some cases, like, as I was saying, like about Cadel Evans, like, so in 05, he finished eighth.
Mm-hmm.
All of the seven guys in front of him at some point in their career tested positive. In the record books, he's not listed as the winner. The winner has been vacated because it was Armstrong.
Right.
Okay. And in 06, Floyd Landis was the winner, and then he was busted and he was stripped of it and was given to the guy who finished second.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the time, because it's so hard to track back through who's doped and who hasn't, they just kind of wipe results rather than award it to someone else.
That makes sense. So it's hard to pinpoint that he was definitely doping during this race kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, like, you got, right, so he was doping. Well, and the next guy was, and the next guy was. And it's like, well, if we're scrapping all their results, you know, you finished like 12th or 14th and all of a sudden you're the winner, that feels weird. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's not like where you were second or third or fourth and, you know, you were right on the cusp. Like, we talk about cases where you've had 10 or 12 riders who've all been busted. It's like, you can't go back and award it to someone who finished so far down, or like 25 minutes behind. Like,
doesn't make
any sense.
That makes sense. It kind of robs it of its validity a little bit if you start doing that. I've got a question, just a hypothetical for you guys before we move on to the next section, right? I used to hang out with this guy when I lived back in Adelaide. We used to watch sports and stuff all the time. And it was around like when the Lance Armstrong stuff happened, and then all these writers were like, you know, he's been busted, they're all busted. And my buddy used to have this thing, we used to argue about it all the time. He said, well, if they're all doing it, just let them do it and just let them race doing the performance enhancing drugs. What do you think about that idea?
I still think like you've got the people that don't take performance enhancing drugs. And so like, yeah, I'd still
you could have two classes, you know?
This is the case for a second Olympics where people are allowed to open. We see just how fast people can run. that's essentially what it is. You're like, Let the guys dope in the 100 and see if they can run sub 7. Like, why not?
Yeah.
I'm not in favor of it. I get where you're coming from, but I'd rather promote clean racing and just throw dopers out and, you know, throw out half the race if you have to. I don't care.
Yeah. I think just like, as if I was going to do it, I'm chicken. I wouldn't dope. No way. I don't want to die. But just as a spectator, if these guys are like, yeah, I want to do this, I want to see how fast I can go, you're telling me you wouldn't be keen to watch that?
I'm not sure that I wouldn't be, but I don't want that kind of being taken as the version of the sport that we look up to.
Don't want it to be the norm. Yeah, I get that.
You know,
that
if you want to do a special one-off where it's like, let's see how juiced everyone can get and how fast they can go, I'm like... Fine, but don't call it the tour, or don't call it the Olympics. Like, do something else.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Just curious. I was thinking about that. I was always going to ask you guys when I was watching the doco. So interesting.
We'll move on now. And again, documentary. There's no real characters to base it off because it all is real life people that we're looking at. And so I don't really know how we'll talk about the acting performances, but obviously still in a documentary, you still have a focus on particular people. You still know what they're going through. You're still shown what they're going through, how they're feeling. And I guess like we've talked about it a little bit earlier as well, where we see like the, you know, Fogel and his face when he sees that there's another story developing. We see it in Grigory when he like receives a call and just like all his distress with being in Russia, wanting to flee, all the calls that he gets about people wanting to talk to him, the potential for going to jail, all this sort of stuff. So I guess like from what we saw in the documentary and what the documentary allowed us to see, was there any like parts of these people that you like wanted to focus on that perhaps like enhanced how, you know, you viewed the documentary or how the documentary viewed these people?
So I don't know if this is a good answer to that question, Jace. It's a very good question, but I've been thinking about this one. And like I said earlier, I just like the character that is Grigory. I want to hang out with him for a night and see what weird he says, what weird clothes he wears, and just have a laugh with him. So I enjoyed that performance. That character is my favorite character. Is that a good answer?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, for me, it's really hard. I mean, there are moments that I can really pinpoint that I was like, this is a really great moment to have captured. Like when... you can see on Fogel's face when he realizes just what he's making a documentary about. And kind of the laissez-faire nature of Grigory I quite like, but on the whole, I have to say it's a little bit hard, you know, in a documentary to talk about that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I get it. I just tried to think of another way to frame the question that could ignite a bit of discussion. But yeah, I think that... like, as I think I said it before as well, like the sort of like heightened drama of it all, especially throughout the second half, you know, you got a little bit sense of, you know, how everyone was feeling as the story developed. And I think that, yeah, it all was pieced together really well, in terms of focusing on a particular person or a particular event, and then focusing on everyone who was sort of involved and like what they were thinking at the time and what they might have been going through, you know, just what was going through in their head, really. And so I thought like the build up towards those moments, you know, through use of various shots and, you know, even just the suspense like of the music, I think that it really saw, or you really saw like the people in different lights because of those developments. So
yeah, the way it was put together was fantastic. I agree. I don't know. Do you think the production values are why it won an Oscar, or do you think the like behemoth of a news story that it broke is why it won an Oscar, or maybe a combination of the two?
I think a big part is the news story. Because I think if you'd had this documentary that was about really not very much, like performance enhancing drugs don't work for everyone,
mm-hmm.
You might have got a nomination for the production value, but I think it was the fact that it latched onto this massive story and really changed the course of sport that it got all that attention and awards that it very much deserved.
Yeah, I think like another thing as well is it is a Netflix original documentary, so you already sort of know the sort of standard that the movie might be, you know, filmed, and just like the editing of it all. Like, you know, Netflix produce ample amounts of original content, movies, TV shows, documentaries. And so I think that by having it as, you know, made by Netflix or for Netflix, I think that you know the type of documentary or, yeah, how it'll be all sort of put together and formatted. And so I think that because it had that, I think that the documentary itself was able to be put together really well. And that might have sort of, yeah, got it to the heights that it did, obviously winning an Oscar.
Yeah, those streaming services, they really know how to put together a documentary, you know. It's like they've just got a production line that they can just churn them out. Netflix, probably the pioneers with streaming, as with most things streaming. Something that piqued my interest is, if this is a Netflix production, was that their first Oscar that they won?
Yeah, so it was the first time a Netflix original had taken home an Oscar for Best Documentary Feature.
Right. That'd have to, because I know that they before this year, they were throwing good money after bad, trying to win a Best Picture Oscar, and hadn't managed to, but at least they got the Best Documentary Oscar.
So obviously Icarus was the first time that a Netflix original had won Best Documentary Feature, but it wasn't the first Netflix original that had won an Oscar. Instead, that was a documentary as well, but again, not for documentary feature, but it was a documentary called The White Helmets. It was done in 2017, or it was a 2016 film, but it was nominated for the 2017 Academy Awards. And it won the Oscar for Best Documentary Short Subject.
Okay. Wow. So they just got the wheels spinning in 2016 and really got some traction in 2017. Took the mini award in 2017, took the big one in 2018.
Yeah, so The White Helmets was only a 40-minute documentary. So that's obviously why it won that short subject side of things until the next year Icarus won the feature.
Well, that's just classic good planning. That's what that is.
Mm-hmm. We have this prompt at the end of every Goals on Film episode where we get a bit creative. We think about a movie that we want to get made. This week we will ask the question, if you could have a sports conspiracy movie get made, what would it be and why? And you can base it on real life. You can base it on something that you think might, you know, you want to come to light. Just go be creative on it if you need to. So What have you got?
You want me to go, Dan?
Yeah, you go first, Dewey. I've got a long list. I'm going to try and narrow it down.
So I sort of suggested this off mic before we got going, and I had an idea in mind. I'm a big Adelaide Crows fan, right? We made it to the grand final.
This 2017, Stu?
Yeah, yeah.
Or is it about 2018 instead?
Well, it covers both, actually. And we went into this grand final, and being from Adelaide, right, it never even entered my mind. We were so dominant that year, never even entered my mind that we would lose, and we just capitulated, right? And it turns out there was all this stuff happening in the background. You know, I can't remember the name. Maybe we shouldn't say the name of the company anyway. But, you know, there was all this controversial stuff happening in the background that, you know, you read excerpts about and you hear whispers about, but you don't really know the full story. I'd love to see a documentary that kind of just dives into that and gives me the answers as to why the Adelaide Crows must inflict so much pain on me. So, yeah.
It's personal. They're like, that's Stewie Kavanagh. We're going to make it hurt.
Yeah, that's the universe. It does that to me, I'm telling you.
I would love that documentary idea, Stewie, if it focused mostly on the grand final itself.
Jason, you're lucky I can't put you in the meeting room with you.
But no, I think like that's a story that like you sort of find out information as it sort of leaks, or at least you did at the time and like throughout all of 2018, and just like the form that the Crows were in 2018 as well, and you know the heights that they'd reached the year before. And so I think that a deeper dive into that would be good, Stewie.
Yeah, you get dribs and drabs as people bring out books and whatnot, but it's just not enough. Anyway, it still pains me to this day.
Dan, you said that you had a list that you wanted to whittle down, but honestly, give us all that you've got.
So one of the like conspiracy, you know, documentaries I'd love to get is Sandpapergate. Inside story of what really went down and how that plan was formed and who was involved, because there's some parts of it that still don't stack up to this day. And I think that would be a really interesting one.
Be fascinating.
For me, one would be Deflategate, which of course was a huge story in the NFL that the New England Patriots were accused of deflating footballs. Where in fact, like they were acquitted by scientists, but not by the NFL. And so I'd love a documentary into what happened that the NFL ignored the scientific evidence and continually be punished. Like what was the axe they were grinding for that to be the case? And I think there are, you know, this a cycling show at the end of the day today. I would love to see a documentary about, it's not so much a conspiracy, but like what goes into the Tour de France? Like, because for those who don't know, and I've had the privilege of actually being at the Tour, it is a village at the start and at the end of every day. And it moves around the country along with every team, you know, every day for 3 weeks. This city of probably 5,000 people across the whole Tour, I reckon, gets up and moves every day. And they set up and they ride the whole route, they drive the whole route, and then it all keeps happening. And like the logistics behind that, I think would be fascinating to see.
That one's a winner. Well, they're all great ideas, Dan, but I really like that Tour de France one. That's fantastic. That'd be a 10-episode Netflix series. I could see that being a thing.
Also, interestingly, this year at the Tour, they are filming a Drive to Survive-esque documentary series at the Tour de France, of like what goes into the race and the behind the scenes and the which rider hates which rider and because of what. And having seen the racing this year, it has been brilliant racing. So I think it's actually going to be quite an exciting documentary. So stay tuned for that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Jason, what about you? You got any conspiracy theories or cycling that you want to see in, turned into a documentary?
Yeah, not cycling, but and I don't know. This is more reflective of sports in general, I think. And it's going to be taking a look at sort of new teams, new franchises entering a league and just doing so well, you know, right from the start. So, you know, I look at something like, you know, if we want to keep it local, thinking about like the Western Sydney Wanderers. So they came into the A-League men competition in 2012 and they finished in first place in their first season and became runners up as a result in their first season. I look at something more internationally as well with the Vegas Golden Knights in the NHL. Their first season, they reached the Stanley Cup. They did lose as well. So maybe it's a bit of a trend that, you know, new franchises making it to the final and losing. But I think like my idea on this is just like the formation of these new teams and like how they're built for greatness and just everything that goes into building these new teams. And obviously, you know, with a new team, you sort of build them for success, but not necessarily, or not in most cases, I think you would think that they would make a final or the last game of the season, you know, in their first season, or, you know, finish on top, you know, be competitive enough to do that. And so I think that, yeah, my conspiracy of thoughts is just to see what goes into a new franchise to take them all the way to the top very early on in their career.
That's a great idea. You guys have, you know, hit a couple of home runs there. I'll watch both of those. And I think, you know, if you ever get the funding to maybe make this one happen, Jace, you could get the entire brass of the Gold Coast Suns to maybe come to the premiere screening so they could learn how to build a successful franchise.
Well, I think if we're going to talk about the Gold Coast Suns, no, what they should be showing, there might be a replay of Carmichael Hunt, Nora Anderson starring in the trailer, right?
I don't know. I thought that's where Stewie was going with that too, to get back at me for the Adelaide thing. It's good that Stewie, you're a friend and you don't mention that to me. But Dan,
what, you're gonna put me in the waiting room?
Yeah, I actually can. All right. Well, unfortunately, this is where the fun has to come to an end. So, Dan, Stewie, would you like to share your social medias and any other channels that we might be able to find you at?
By all means, Dan, go for it, mate.
I am at DCoppel, wherever you get your social media fix, unless you get it from Tumblr, in which case you cannot find me there. And you can hear my dulcet tones on this week, all of the Edge of the Crowds podcasts, except for the politics, the Edge of the Election. So catch me on any of our podcasts or on the site, edgeofthecrowd.com.
Yeah, you can catch me at edgeofthecrowd.com from time to time. Been a bit slack lately, but I'll be back in it soon. After Extra Time, also find me at Stewie the Sports Guy on most social media platforms. Unless you're looking for me on Twitter, then you are looking for at Stewie is sick of it. So there you go.
And you can find me on both Twitter and Instagram at Jace Erbs. You've been listening to Goals on Film. You can find Goals on Film on Twitter and Instagram at Goals on Film Pod. Goals on Film is part of the Edge of the Crowd network. You can find Edge of the Crowd on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and TikTok at Edge of the Crowd. You can also view any of our stories, be it sport, culture, or politics, or if you want to have a look at our extensive range of podcasts, go to www.edgeofthecrowd.com. Until next week, thanks for listening.